Welcome back to Training Babble. I am Dave Schell, and again, we are joined by Ryan Cooper. Today, we are going to continue talking about the power metric TLAs. We started off last time. We barely got past functional threshold power. So Ryan, today, we're going to try to let's set a stretch goal of trying to get two more off the list today. How's that sound?
Sounds like a good goal.
Yeah, I think we can do it. We just have to not go too deep. So just as a quick kind of recap, last time we talked about functional threshold power and average power, I think. Right?
Yeah, I think that's all I believe that's right. Like that's about all we got through. And do you want to do a quick recap of what those are
an hour long recap? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think our closing remarks were power is essentially just a measure of rate of work. Functional threshold power is the max sustainable effort you can hold for around 30 to 60 minutes. And it's not a single number. It's a range that can change day to day or week to week. And then average power is what moves you versus normalized power, which is what we're going to get into today.
Perfect.
All right. So let's start talking about normalized power. As I just said, last time we talked about average power, and average power is just that. It's an average of the second by second recording of the power that you're putting out. Whereas normalized power is more of an estimate. Really what normalized power is a 30-second weighted moving average meant to mirror the metabolic cost, or kind of how hard it feels to your body. One of my old coworkers, I love the way he put it, where average power is what moves you, normalized power is what you feel.
Isn't that what I said? Am I that old coworker?
I don't think you did say that. Maybe you stole that. Yeah.
I might have stolen it, probably. No, but that's exactly how I describe it too. It's the average power is kind of that's if you were to model something and try and get a kind of performance model, you'd look at the average power as like the actual, you know, the actual force that's going in, and normalized power is this proxy, as you're saying, for how does that feel internally on your body, kind of like and so one of the ways to think about that is the harder you go average power wise, the higher that normalized power is going to be, right? And then the lower you go, and we'll get into the reasons for that, the highs are higher and the lows are kind of close, right? If that makes sense, to what the average power value would be.
Right, exactly. And that's where the weighted part of the equation comes in, is that as you get closer to functional threshold power, it's giving more weight to the effort because it's more metabolically costly. And part of the reason that was done, so this was another one of Andy Coggins' things, so he came up with this. One of the reasons it was done is it mirrors a lot of what's happening in the body. So if you look at a lactate curve, it's steady, 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 steady. And then all of a sudden you go hard enough and there's an inflection point, and then you go a little bit harder. And then it, like you had said on the last podcast, like then it like starts to climb exponentially. And so that's exactly what would happen with normalized power.
And a lot of people notice that, right? Like you have that feeling. You could be sitting at, say, 85% of FTP, and it hurts a little bit, but it's not, you're sustainable, right? Or 70%. But then as you get closer to 90 or 95, or when you start doing intervals over at 105%, then that, you know, your time that you can, your time kind of that you can handle that is significantly lower, right? And so you feel it naturally where this, that this power is exponentially more difficult, right? As you go up above that kind of threshold. And so this was a nice way to kind of easily calculate that, right? In a way that was scalable, that you didn't have to go in the lab and have testing and have all this kind of stuff. So you just had a very scalable calculation that you can perform on, that you can do on any ride that you have, right?
Right. Yeah, and the other part of this, and like I had the opportunity to ask Andy one time why he chose 30 seconds, and he said it like essentially it mirrors heart rate. If you go and start a hard effort, it takes about 30 seconds for your heart rate to kind of catch up with what you're doing, and so normalized power kind of mirrors that. And so I like will tell my athletes a lot of times, like the inverse of that is like heart rate is this like mirrors normalized power. And so when you like you go out and do an effort and your average power is just all over the place, and you know people stress about like holding their target within a few watts, and it's just not practical, especially outside. But if you look at your heart rate and the heart rate stays pretty steady the whole time, then that tells you that's what your body was feeling, you know. Right. So like the effort was steady even though the power is all over the place.
No, that makes sense. Do you want to go over what the equation is?
That's your department, man.
Well, so basically, when you say a 30-second weighted average, it's not a 30-second weighted average of the power. It's a 30-second weighted average of power of your watts to the fourth power. Right. And so again, when we were talking about it a minute ago, that high effort is going to be more amplified, right? So you take all the power, the weighted average 30 second rolling to the fourth power, you do the average on that, and then you square or fourth root it, right? And so you basically then take it back down to the kind of final number that you see. And so that's the kind of the simplistic equation that drives it. Now you may have some insight, and I can't remember exactly why it was fourth power versus 3 point whatever. And you went over why the 30-second rolling, which makes sense. I've also seen people implement 25-second, and I know there's some other things that have reduced that number down even lower. If I remember correctly, I think Today's Plan or something uses a different number for theirs. So one thing to remember is if you're using different programs, so let's say you're using Training Peaks or Today's Plan or just the Garmin calculation that's in there, everybody's rolling 30-second may be a little bit different. Most people use the same formula, but you can have some variance in this number from platform to platform. So that's something to be aware of.
Yeah, and I don't know. That's a good point, because I don't know what like Strava calls it weighted power or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what duration they're using.
They may be using 25 second. I know somebody was used 25 second. And when we did Best Bike Split,
I think Skiba does.
Okay.
In his Apollo race day or whatever software was called.
I remember when we were looking at the calculations on Best Bike Split originally, we went back and forth on that as well. So we looked at 25 second, we looked at 30 second, and the impact of that on the race optimization. We ended up going with after talking to Andy Coggin, we ended up going back with the original formula.
Yeah. And so that brings up a good point. And first, let me go back to address your one question, is why does it go to the fourth? And my understanding, and I don't understand math like you do, so I might be way off, but it's to mirror the curvilinear response of the body's like a lactate curve. And so I think that's why they take it to the fourth. Would that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I did hear somewhere that it was also easy, right? Like you do it to the fourth, and so it rounded everything up and it was nice. You know, the actual number may or may not be there, and it may, or, you know, right at that point, maybe it's closer to 3.8 or whatever it is, right? But to make a, you know, kind of an easy calculation.
And then, so to go back to that 30 second thing, like this is something that I've dealt with. And the whole reason I asked Andy why he chose 30 seconds, like in cyclocross races, a lot of times the efforts might be more like 10 to 15 seconds. And so they almost don't get captured by that 30 second. And so it had to do with other things too, but like the power or the normalized power would be less than you would expect it to be, because it's like those efforts are happening before they can actually get captured. And so I could see why other programs might go with a shorter duration.
So yes, and I've heard that same argument too, although, you know, that'll get picked up in this rolling average, right? It'll get picked up in the forefront in the back end, right?
You're rolling
through. However, if you're like digging into the data, right? Like, let's say you want to zoom in on something, or you want to kind of, if you're not looking at it holistically, as a single ride, and you want to look at different segments of the ride, then it's not going to be accurate, right? Because not that it's not going to be accurate, but it'll miss those points, right? Because it's
right.
Yeah.
And so before we move on to the next thing here, let's just talk about, like we were just saying, average power is what moves you. Normalized power is what it feels like. And so when we're talking about looking at a workout or training, which one should you use?
It's very dependent, right? I think you look at both. And it depends on the type of riding too. So we'll talk about IF here in a second, and we'll talk about VI here in a second. But I think depending on the type of riding, you need to look at both. So steady state riding, they're going to be very close to each other, right? There's not going to be that much difference. When you start to get into things like cyclocross or mountain bike or these kind of very start and stop type of racing and training, then it's going to be quite different, right? The average and the normalized be quite different. So I don't think there's a simple answer. You need to look at this one or you need to look at that one. I think you have to look at both, right? Yeah,
well, and where I was trying to go with that is, I think definitely for training, like when you're setting targets and stuff like that, you want to go off of average power. And that can be hard. Like you just said, if you're out riding the trail or something, the power is jumping all over. So then I don't think power is probably the best metric. RPE and heart rate become better metrics when you're doing workouts on the trail. After the fact, I think that the normalized power can be really good for analyzing a workout to give you an estimate. And I just want to stress that it's an estimate of how hard it felt. If you would have paced it perfectly steady. Right. But that doesn't mean that was your power. And I think a lot of people fall into that trap, especially with best bike split, is when people are coming up with a pacing plan and they want to go off their normalized power, but it's like, that's not what you were doing.
For that kind of thing, use normalize because you want to target the optimization off of how it feels, right? Meaning that you don't want your average power, it could be 200, and that's what you can actually perform, right? You go do a test and you hold your FTP, you find your, and that's based on average, right? And so you go get that average power and you're holding it steady state. So, you know, your normalize is not going to fluctuate very much. But when you go out and, like you said, you go to the real world and suddenly, you know, what it feels like is what you're targeting. So you want that same level of burn in the leg or whatever. Like if you're going out and saying, okay, I'm going to target 220 watts, that's what you build the optimization off of. But the average power is what the targets are, right? Because that's what's going to fluctuate. So I 100% agree with you. Like what you're doing for the training and the prescription piece, it should be based on average power. And then what you do on the analysis, or, you know, in Best Bike Split's case, it's basically proactively analyzing what you will do on the race, right? And then prescribing the average. So exactly what you're saying, like post race, when you're doing analysis, that's where you look at it and you say, okay, how did that feel? But it's not just power, as you mentioned. So what was your rate of perceived exertion for that? You know, there's all these other factors. So if you're trying to always hit that number is going to fluctuate, right? And yeah.
So let's talk about some, I have a feeling we're never going to get to these other ones today. we're already going down the hole. But like, what are some of the things that impacts it? And like you and I have talked about this a lot, is, and this goes into the next metric also, but like, surges are going to make a higher normalized power. And I think this really comes into play if somebody has a big anaerobic work capacity or FRC or whatever you want to call it, is if you can go way above threshold, if you can like go really deep to that well, mm-hmm. it's going to totally inflate your normalized power for a ride. And so let's say you had somebody go out for a zone two ride, but do a sprint every 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's going to like totally inflate their normalized power, but that's not what they did. Like if you were to look at the speed or whatever. The other thing seen is like with Ironman athletes or like hilly courses is if people don't have the confidence or if you just don't have the gears to pedal downhill, there's a lot of coasting and then like coming out of a corner, stuff like that, that's going to inflate the normalized power as well.
Yeah. If you have a complex course, you know, with a lot of turns, a lot of accelerations, decelerations, et cetera, that's going to, your normalized power is going to be higher because you're doing all these surges and going back and forth. But your average power, you know, because you can't hold the steady state. So you're, you know, funny thing is your normalized power may actually not be that much different than it would be in a steady state course, but your average power will be a lot lower because you're, you know, you're surging, then you're backing off. Now there's some Tim Kusick, who created WKO. He had a saying for somebody like normalized busters or something like that.
Exactly. People, yeah. People that like.
They thrive in that kind of environment, right? They thrive in this surgy kind of, they can surge well over threshold for a long time, back off, then surge again, then back off, then surge again. Right. And I believe that's what that was.
Well, it'd be like if somebody was trying to use this, and I might be misspeaking, but it's like, if you were trying to use normalized power to guesstimate your FTP and somebody wanted mm-hmm. to use like a 60 minute race effort or like a crit or something.
Yeah.
Well, these guys that can go super deep, and we'll come into this when we go into intensity factor next, but like typically for an hour long race, if you're going all out, you would expect your intensity factor to be around 1.0 or so, you know, maybe a little higher, maybe a little under or whatever. But if somebody's one of these NP or normalized power busters, theirs might be like 1.2 or 1.3 because right. they can just go so far above and then go back, you know, and then recover yeah. and then do it again and then recover.
Well, and you see that like in the pro ranks, like, cyclocross, for instance, like, you know, probably some of the better cyclocross riders may fall into that bucket, right? Because they can go all out on these tough mud climbs and then they ease and they flow into the transitions and stuff. And then they just can keep doing that. In the one day classics, you used to see people that were really good at that, right? I think Cancellara was like that. And some of these other people where they could just go so deep over and over and over again, and finally, and just to break people, because you yeah. have these people that are on their wheel, and you have to like, you know, they just go deep over and over and over again until they fight it free, and then they can hold a steady state. So,
all right, now let's get into the next TLA, which is intensity factor, or IF, and essentially IF is a measure of how hard that race was based, or how hard that workout or race was as a percentage of threshold. And that essentially uses normalized power. So it looks at normalized power compared to your functional threshold power. And so let's say that you have a functional threshold power of 300 watts and you went out and did a workout for that normalized power of 200 watts, then you'd end up with an IF of around 0.66. This can be really useful, like especially with best bike split. I guess there's lots of different ways that I use this, but one is just like as athletes are uploading workouts, it gives me an idea of how hard the workout was. And so if I expect it to be an endurance workout, I would expect it to be like maybe 0.6 to 0.7. If we're doing a tempo workout, I expect it to be more like 0.8 to 0.85. As we're getting harder workouts, it's going to start approaching FTP, which would be at an intensity factor of 1.0 or 100% of threshold. A caveat to that.
Do you ever see, is another one, and this may go with our kind of MP busters, do you ever see IF over 1?
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was trying to get at with... with the coasting and stuff. And that was something that I beat my head against the wall for a long time, is that like I end up with athletes that have an abnormally high IF, and it's because they have an abnormally high normalized power. And the reason it ends up being is because there's so much coasting or so much surging, right? And so it's like, if there's a lot of stop time and then having to start again and stuff like that, then you end up with this normalized power that just doesn't make sense compared to what I would typically see.
Now, would you use that, let's say it's not a surging type of athlete, would you use that as a potential indicator that you need to do a new FTP test? If you start seeing that creep up, if you start seeing that IF creep up for the workouts, now granted, if they're doing the workouts as prescribed, you probably prescribe it with a certain IF in mind. So, you know, they're basically going over and above the workout that you would have prescribed. But if you start seeing that for the same kind of heart rate numbers, et cetera, go from 0.7 to 0.75 to, for those same kind of workouts, would that be an indicator that the general fitness, like portion of that, the FTP, it kind of represents your general fitness, needs to be evaluated?
Absolutely. And that's exactly why I look at it. And I was going to add that there is a caveat to that, in that when we're looking at IF, you have to take into account the warm up and the cool down. That's always going to bring it down a little bit, right? And so it's like, if I'm looking at a workout, I'm probably going to highlight the middle section. But I'm always balancing it with the athlete's comments, their heart rate, and their RPE. So like you said, if we're seeing the IF trend up over time and it seems higher than I would typically see it, but then they're still saying that it felt pretty easy, the RPE is low, things like that, then that would be an indication that maybe it's time to retest. Or sometimes I don't even retest. I just bump it up 10 watts because it looks like they've gotten fitter, you know?
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of interesting. I don't want to delve back into FTP because we already went over it ad nauseum. But that was kind of an interesting point. Like putting athletes through those kind of tests and stuff is can be pretty grueling and taxing on the training. So this is another way to kind of potentially get a proxy and help adjust that number without having to go and do those kind of FTP tests.
Totally. And this is the perfect segue into how we use it with Best Bike Split and for different races, is that we know that so there's an inverse relationship with intensity and duration. So basically the shorter the duration, the harder you can go. And so let's say for 30 seconds, you could probably do I just off the top of my head, let's say like a 3.0, right? Like, so 300% of threshold for 30 seconds. That's pretty high. Let's say 200% of threshold. But then as you get out to 6 hours, you can only do, let's say 70, 75% of threshold. Really good athletes, maybe they're pushing up into the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. And so we can start to use that as a metric. Like I have an athlete right now who's doing gravel races, and he's like out doing these 5 hour rides, and his IF is like 0.85. And I'm like, there's no way. Like he would have to be going so hard. And so that's an indication that we need to adjust something, because he's getting too much credit for that workout, basically.
One thing to kind of remember too, is that now we're talking about a calculation of an estimate FTP and an estimate normalized power. Yeah. And now you're using those two things. And so there are going to be other factors at play. And so I know we mentioned this last time, but you know, looking at the power meter accuracy, et cetera, looking at, you know, where you've set your FTP, how they're calculating normalized power, and what platform you're using to calculate normalized power, et cetera. So, you know, you kind of want these things to be consistent, because if you're trying to compare, let's say, you know, you're riding on a trainer and using that power source, and then you're outside and you're using your pedal power source, and then you're using your Garmin based calc for one and Training Peaks based calc for another, you know, it's nice to have some consistency across the board, so that when you are comparing these over time, that at least it's the same. it's the same approximate value, right? That matches across the board.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, just in addition to that, terrain matters too. Like we were talking about on the last podcast, it's like you're going to expect power to be lower for most people. Like if they're riding trail, it's going to be lower because there's a lot of coasting and stuff like that, but heart rate might be the same and RPE might be the same. And so people just need to keep that in mind. It's like the indoor power that you're taking to the trail, like might not be a good indication of how hard you're actually working.
Right. You mentioned RPE and the other factors that you need to take into account to kind of get that bigger picture of how the athlete's training is going.
Yeah. So just like one last thing on here, and I already mentioned it once, but I use the IF a lot of time, like just for reviewing workouts to see, like, does it make sense with how hard I think it should be, or do we need to adjust something? But then also for setting targets or setting goals for races. And again, talking about that intensity duration relationship, some common intensity factors. So let's say you're doing a race that should take around 1 hour, then we would expect it to be like 1.0, maybe a little higher, maybe a little lower. When we're getting out to like a 6 hour race, then we might see it being like 0.75 or a little higher. Once we're getting out to a 12 hour race, now it's getting into like 0.65. I mean, like some of the pros doing Unbound, they're like, I think they did like 0.72. But point being, like, the longer the race is, the lower the IF has to be, because you just physiologically cannot.
Well, your energy system, you know, you go all into, you know, you're basically relying on all your base, right? Like the long. And so if most of your base is done at 50, at 0.5, 5.6, then you're going to end up at 0.5, 5.6, right? Like that's just where you're going to end up. The pros on some of these races, right? I look at it, you can do this in running too, which is kind of interesting. And I know we looked at this for a long time ago at Training Peaks for all the Boston Marathon, Chicago Marathon kind of elite runners. So if you looked at the top 10% or the top, you know, and then you go even further, the top elite pros, they were running at, say, for a marathon, you know, they're out there a lot. It's a lot shorter period of time than you and I would be out there. But they're sitting at 0.97 of their threshold pace for, you know, a little over 2 hours.
Right.
Whereas other people are, you know, much lower, 0.8, but and running is different than cycling, but significantly lower, 0.82, 0.75, point whatever. But they're also out there for 4 or 5 hours. And so you have to look at that, like you said, the inverse relationship on the duration. But even at 2 hours, you know, they're holding their same kind of 1 hour pace. They're holding 97% of it for 2 hours. So there's
elite athletes, right? And so there's two parts of that. Like you said, it's part of it is the intensity relationship. The other part of it is the level of the athlete. Yeah. Better athletes, fitter athletes are going to be able to hold a higher percentage of that threshold for longer. And that's why they're elite. So another caveat to this, and then this gets into our next metric, is something that can totally impact intensity factor is how variable it was. And like we were talking about, is like some people will have abnormally high normalized power, but it's because it was really variable and very surgy. And so our next metric is variability index, or VI. And this is a measure of just how variable a ride was. And I always like to use the analogy of like highway miles versus city miles. So if you were driving your car and you're like flooring it and then coast and then flooring it and then coast, you're going to use a lot more gas than if you just lightly press the gas and hold a steady speed the entire time, you know?
Yeah. I guess it still works. You do lose a lot more battery. I wanted to touch one last thing, and because we talked about using the targets and stuff. What are some places? I know Joe Friel used to have a, or you, I mean, he still does, but kind of a cheat sheet for Ironman racing where it had different intensity factors that you should target based on duration, et cetera. Are there any other kind of, for other types of races, are there any kind of go-to like rule of thumbs that people can go to and to get generalized targets?
Yeah, I think the biggest resource that you have at this point is Strava. Like, anytime if I have an athlete doing a race or something and I'm trying to get an idea of like how long they're going to be out there, it's the first time they've done the race, something like that, I'll go look at the results and see some of the names and then try to go to Strava and find some of those people. A lot of people share their data. And so then you can actually see, like, I think they call it relative intensity on Strava, mm-hmm. which is yeah. essentially the same thing. I'll look at that. But I think what I was going to with this variability index is it's also the VI also matters. And so it's like, we don't just want to know the IF, but also like how surgy it's going to be, because that tells you also like informs like how you should be training for it. But yeah, let's continue on with VI for a moment here. So what variability index is it's normalized power compared to average power. And so if normalized power and average power were exactly the same, you'd have a VI of 1.0, meaning that average power, normalized power, exactly the same. And so it was perfectly steady. The further away you get, the higher it gets. And so to provide a frame of reference, a flat time trial, we're looking for like 1.05 or less. Once we get into a hillier race, now we might be talking, and now I'm talking about gravel. Like for the pros, I see like 1.1 to 1.15. For the age groupers, that variability index is going to be higher because there might be more stops and more coasting, things like that. When we get into mountain bike, now we're talking about like 1.3, 1.35. Again, super surgy, super like a lot of coasting, stuff like that. And so that comes into play too when we're talking about the relative intensity factor for those races.
And one thing that we should probably stress is that is okay, right? Like that those numbers are good in performance wise. And the reason I say that is for the type of race that it is, that variability index doesn't have to be one. In fact, you don't want it to be. You may want you for a flat time trial with no wind, et cetera, et cetera. You probably do want it to be one, right? But for that mountain bike or that cyclocross race or that gravel race that's super hilly and not just a steady state climb, but multiple frequency of hills, of different durations and different types, kind of different gradients, that difference between the normalized and the average will lead to a performance difference, meaning that you went harder when you should have gone harder and you went easier when it was more advantageous to go easy. So it doesn't mean that you should coast down every hill, but if you're a very good descender, you can recover and you can not lose any speed by not applying the power. So a lot of mountain bike racers, you know, if they're really, really good, they're applying the power where it makes sense to apply it and taking off where it makes sense to take off.
Exactly. And like, I guess two things to comment on that. One is like, I think we mentioned this on the last one, like the goal is always speed, right? It's getting across the course as fast as you possibly can. It's not pretty graphs. That's never the goal. and so like my very basic pacing advice to all athletes is, and I got this from Joe, who I think he got it from somebody else, but like when the course is slow, work. When the course is fast, recover. Meaning when the course is slow, you're going uphill or into a headwind or through deep sand, work, because you're trying to maximize your return. Mm-hmm. When the course is fast, going downhill or with the tailwind, recover, because you're just not getting the return on your investment. And so I think a lot of athletes get so hung up on like trying to pedal downhill and stuff like this. And it's like with wind resistance, it becomes exponentially harder to gain 1 mile per hour, right? And so it's like, if you're going down a hill at 25 miles an hour, barely able to grab a gear, but you're like trying to spin 130 RPM so that you can eke out like half a mile more per hour. Like, you'd probably be better off putting that energy into the next hill because you're going to get way more return there.
And you see it in different races and tactics too, because what you'll find is when somebody puts in a huge effort or surge at a certain point of the course, because it's hard, right? Think about a crosswind where there's not, you're kind of think about a gravel race or a road race where you have this big crosswind. And so everybody's kind of working hard, right? Let's ignore the headwind for now, but a crosswind where no one gets the shelter of the draft, really. And so if you have somebody who puts a big surge in there and knows that the strong wind is going to stay and you're going to, the course will take, you know, take a turn and suddenly you have this tailwind, the power that the chasers, that the chasing pack, the peloton has to do to rein that person in is so high that, you know, that's where you get those long breakaway wins in some of these big races. You used to, you know, see some of the stage races, the tour and stuff. You'll see a solo person go out and do kind of these long breakaway wins because like the level of effort that the peloton would have to do is going to trash them for the following days. Right. So they just say, okay, never mind. It's not worth the chase.
Well, and they have to be organized too.
Yeah.
I think is like, I see that in this needs to be another podcast on its own, but it's like, I see it in gravel racing all the time. And it's kind of crazy to me where like people are in this like nice pace line and there's like a 20 mile an hour crosswind and like nobody's getting the benefit. And so I just like kind of slip on the inside and just like easily ride past everybody.
Right.
Because, but it's like people are in a pace line, 'cause it's like, well, this is what you do. Like,
right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just kind of fall back into the mental pattern, right. That you already done. And if you just think about it a little bit and you do some pre-planning, same thing with hills and various other places, you can look and say like, okay, where are the hills that if I push a little bit harder here, still within under my limits, right. But I push a little bit harder here, I'm really going to put strain on everybody else. And I know that if I do that and get a break, and then suddenly I'm home free because I've got this descent and I'm a good descender or whatever it is. You know, you can kind of play to your skill. And that's where this VI piece, where if you know that you on this particular course that you can do a 1.2 or a 1.5 and use it in the right spot, that you have an advantage, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so that brings us kind of back to the uses of VI. I think that's where it can be really beneficial, is we get so hung up on power and like trying to raise our FTP. It's always about trying to raise our FTP, but not every race is raced the same. And so training for a flat time trial looks different than training for mountain bike. And so using that variability and being able to look and like, you can just look at your training rides or look at a past race file and you see, oh, my VI was 1.3. Well, that tells you, you need to do a lot of variable stuff. And so this might translate to stuff like 30-15s or 20-40s or, sweet spot with burst, which this is something I think about constantly. It's like, again, we get so fixated on one aspect of the fitness, but it's like, it's also like your muscles and being able to contract and relax really quickly and like all these other stuff. And so if you're just training to sit in erg mode all the time and be able to crank out FTP, all of a sudden you get in the race and you're having to like do a bunch of like really variable stuff and you end up cramping because your muscles just aren't prepared for the demands of the race.
Oh, totally. And I think you said something earlier when we were talking about IF around looking at Strava early. And so being able to look at, you know, a lot of times they'll have the whole course as a segment, right? And so you can look at that and see the different riders that you said, look at the top ones and say, okay, for that particular race, like what were their VIs? What did that look like? Cause if I'm hoping to kind of compete with that, or even if I want to compete with the top 20%, or I just want to, you know, those kind of things, you need to know what that's going to take and then train specifically for that goal, as opposed to what you're saying, you know, as opposed to what you mentioned a minute ago, which is, okay, I'm going to increase my FTP from, you know, 250 to 255 and then I'm going to be good. It's like, well, yeah, but if you can't hold a VI of, you know, 1.25 or whatever for that particular course, that's wasted, right? Like that, right. All that training is not going to the goal. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I like everything, it's a balance, right? And so like, I've always, the way I've kind of looked at it is a good portion of the season is getting as fit as possible. And then a smaller portion is about training for the specific demands of the race. Mm-hmm. So using FTP as the example, it's like, okay, let's like, yeah, there is a time, like get as fit as you possibly can, get FTP high, get all these other metrics high. But then as you get within 2 to 3 months of your racing, now start to think about, okay, now how do I apply this fitness specifically to what I'm going to be asking my body to do. Yeah. Well, fantastic. We got through three metrics today. That's a pretty impressive. So how would you, let's have our takeaways here. How would you wrap this up? We talked about normalized power, NP, intensity factor, IF, and variability index, VI. What would your takeaways be today?
I mean, I think the key takeaways are that you need to know the demands of kind of where your end goal is. So whether that's, you know, trying to finish a race, trying to do, you know, trying to place top 10, whether it's a time trial, whether it's a cyclocross race, a hilly mountain bike, et cetera, you need to kind of know what the demands are. And these metrics are good ways to target what you're kind of, where to focus your energy, and then and where to look for kind of improvement and look for post-race, like, or post-rides, like where to kind of see, are the things that I'm doing matching the area that I need to go, right? To kind of, we may have to re-record this.
No, that's actually, that's really insightful. I don't have much to add to that. I think you're right. I think what I was going to say is the goal is never the metrics. And so I think you just said that perfectly. It's like, these are tools to help you train for your goals, right? It's not, the goal is not the metric. The goal is to help you, or the metric is to help you reach your goals. So that was a great way to sum that up.
Well, yeah, I'm glad
you've really outdone yourself today.
I'm glad that somebody found it insightful, because as it was word scramble coming out of my mouth.
No, I think that's great. It's like, they're metrics to, I mean, not just to help you look at the demands of the race, but also to help you, like you said, see if the training is in line with what you're training for.
So. Yeah.
Cool. So next time we'll get into some of the more obscure metrics that we see on Training Peaks. Yeah. So it'll just be a grab bag of every metric, and we'll probably add like five more in the next couple of weeks.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So could you give a preview? What do we got? We have watts per kg. We got, what else we have?
Yeah. That one's not very obscure, PSS. But like decoupling, which is power to heart rate ratio. You mentioned power balance. I've got athletes that have like the power dynamics on their Garmin pedals, which tells you like cleat offset and like all these other things. we'll talk about those things. There's also some other in Training Peaks, like efficiency factor or EF. I'm sure we can find some more TLAs between now and then also.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Have a good one. I'll talk to you soon.